Every year, over 1.2 million die. Their bodies are ravaged, those of the children emaciated. This is a battle that's been raging for millennia. The enemy can infiltrate homes, schools, and even workplaces. And by the time it's made itself known, it may be too late. The key weapon on this front line? A stethoscope, antibiotics, and a map. The enemy? Tuberculosis, simply known as TB. I'm Jerry Broughton, a map historian. Welcome to What's Your Map? An Oculi Mundi exploration. In this series, we hear from those who live, love, and work with maps, making, preserving, interpreting, and being inspired by them. In each episode, we ask our guests to unfold a map that is special to them and to tell us the story that lies behind it. To follow the map as we talk about it on this podcast, go to oculi-mundi.com. Tuberculosis, or TB, is a bacterial disease that primarily affects the lungs. Known as the wasting disease, sufferers face severe weight loss and a persistent cough. It's a staggering death rate, and one that makes it the world's largest infectious disease killer. Tackling this disease with the use of maps is Animesh Sinha, a doctor and advisor with Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders. After joining MSF in 2011, Animesh spent nearly 10 years treating patients out in the field, from South Sudan to Uzbekistan. For the past 5 years, he's been based in London, where he's been advising the organisation on how to tackle TB, a disease ancient Egyptians struggled with, as well as those in the Global South today. And as if his work on TB didn't keep him busy enough, Animesh is also a lead MSF on HIV and hepatitis. Animesh, welcome to What's Your Map? I'm really looking forward to learning more about the map that you brought with you today, which is in front of us here. Tell me, just describe this map to me and why it's so significant for you and your work.
So this is a map of Kulob District in Tajikistan. Tajikistan is a country in Central Asian region. It used to be part of the Soviet Union, and it is surrounded by the other four stans, which are Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan.
And so they're in the bottom, aren't they?
The bottom of the map. Yeah. You can see where this is located.
Yeah.
And this is a very small area, actually. It's around 5 kilometers side by side, and top to down, it is around 20 to 30 kilometers. So not a huge area. You will see that it is situated in a valley. So you've got hills on both sides of the Kulob district. And the Kulob district itself is divided into four different jamaats, as they are called, which translates roughly to a village commune.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Dahana in the north, Ziraki in the middle, Zarabdor in the south, and Kulob rural around the capital, Kulob city. And so that's basically the map.
And these different blue zones indicate?
So these shades of blue actually show the annual TB rate within these small parts of the map. What basically it means is in a year, how many cases of tuberculosis happen, which are represented by the purple dots within the map, and what is the rate, which is basically divided by the population size, whether or not it's a high incidence area or a lower incidence area. That is what you get from the shades of blue. So if you see a darker shade of blue, it basically means that there's more TB based on the number of people who are living there.
And how would you use this map?
So this map is used by MSF in its Zero TB project. A Zero TB project is a project which aims to demonstrate the feasibility of eliminating tuberculosis. And within this Zero TB project in Tajikistan, which we started in 2022, we aim to show that with a five-pronged approach, you can eliminate tuberculosis or actually work towards elimination of tuberculosis. The five prongs are searching for cases, ensuring that everybody who's been diagnosed with TB gets the treatment that they need, the correct treatment, ensuring that any contacts or anybody who has been diagnosed with latent tuberculosis or who's been infected with tuberculosis but does not have the disease yet, they get a preventive treatment. Anybody who is vulnerable in any way gets the support that they need to be able to complete the treatment. And then ensuring that the community is engaged throughout this process, because if the community is not engaged, you can't really achieve much for addressing tuberculosis.
And how does that map fit into that five-pronged process? What's it helping you do?
So it helps us, first of all, understanding where the cases are. So anytime a person is diagnosed with TB, we have people on the ground who put a point on the map that, hey, look, this person has been diagnosed with TB. This person lives around this area. And over a period of time, you get these different shades that, hey, if there are these hotspots which emerge, that there are more people who have been diagnosed with TB in this particular area of the map as compared to the other areas of the map. What that helps us with is ensuring where we put our resources, where do we increase our screening. For example, if there are hotspots within Kulob City, we would put more resources, we would go there more often, do screening more often, as compared to a rural area where you hardly have one or two cases diagnosed with TB, you would not put in so much resources, because within TB, resources are limited.
And you can see those hotspots very clearly here.
You can see very clearly the darker shades within Kulob City. That's where most of the people who have been diagnosed with TB live.
And you see in the legend here, you've got number of TB cases by age, which is in green. So what does this tell us? Because I'm very struck by the figures here in terms of the cases by age, in terms of the 21 to 30 age group. What does this show us here?
So if you look at the chart to the right lower corner, which shows the number of TB cases by age, you will see that the highest number of TB cases is in the age group 21 to 30 years of age, which is basically young people who are ready to start their working lives and ready to get on with their lives and make a career for themselves. And this is because TB is one of the diseases which catches people in the prime of their life. TB has been known by different names throughout history, and one of the names given to TB is the robber of youth. And the reason why it was called the robber of youth was because previously, when medicine wasn't so developed, people used to die either when they were very young or when they were older. And the part where people were in the working age, that was relatively a safe part for most of mankind. That was the period during which people were more productive, less prone to diseases. But TB was one disease which killed people in this age group. And not long ago, a couple of centuries ago, around one-fourth of all deaths were attributed to TB in Europe. And most of them were obviously young men and women. That's why it was given the name the robber of youth. And that is something that we still see, that it is the age group of 20 to 40 which is most affected by tuberculosis.
What's different about Kulob, or is there something particularly significant that you've found in terms of your work there?
So the reason why we selected to work in Kulob City, there were a couple of reasons, actually. One of the reasons was, when you try to demonstrate a concept, and here the demonstration of the concept was that if you put in adequate resources, you can control tuberculosis, you can work towards decreasing the incidence of tuberculosis. When you try to demonstrate that this concept can work, you have to have a relatively small region. You have to have a relatively isolated region where there is little influx or outflux of population. So if you have a population which is constantly changing, it's very difficult to say, because you put in measures and then you don't know how many people are coming, how many people are leaving. It becomes difficult to demonstrate a concept. Kulob is relatively isolated. Mm. As you can see on the map, this is within a valley. Mm. And on either side of Kulob district, there are hills, and there is very little population living outside the Kulob district, and people probably just move there not too often. So we selected this area because we had a previous project in this area as well. So we knew how the system worked. We had staff who had worked with MSF there, and we had good relationships with the National Tuberculosis Program, which helped us set up a project in Kulob City.
And what is it that the map shows you that maybe a written document or some other kind of text can't do?
Yeah, so I'll take it one step back and start with why did we start with this map? And why did we feel the need to put TB on a map? The reason was because we wanted to show that TB is a disease which you can eliminate or work towards elimination. One of the biggest issues in eliminating tuberculosis is the fact that we only find 2/3 of all people who have TB. 1/3 of everybody who has TB go undiagnosed and untreated, and that continues the chain of transmission of infection.
Why is that? Why is that such a high figure?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that the tests which are available to diagnose tuberculosis, the ones which are more sensitive, which are newer and more sensitive, these are not available in everywhere in the world. Then there are certain forms of tuberculosis which are difficult to diagnose, such as tuberculosis which does not affect the lung, which we call extrapulmonary tuberculosis. So getting a specimen from an organ such as the kidney or the liver or the bone or the meninges is very difficult, and it's very difficult to diagnose TB in those specimens. Mm. The third reason is that there are certain age groups where diagnosis of tuberculosis is very difficult, and pediatric age group is one age group where it's very difficult. They have Posse bacillary disease. What it technically means is the number of bacteria that they have in their lungs is less as compared to adults. And when we diagnose TB, we check on what's the number of bacteria there are. And the more the bacteria, the easier it is to diagnose the disease. So these are a couple of reasons why there are a significant proportion of people who have the disease, but they are left undiagnosed and untreated.
It's not a place I know, and I'm sure many listeners don't know Tajikistan very well. You've been there. What's it like, especially the city? Tell me about it.
So the capital of Tajikistan is Dushanbe, which is a rapidly changing city. I went there 5 years ago, and I went there again a couple of years ago. And in the 2 or 3 years gap, the city has changed so much, it's hard to recognize it being the same city. There's a lot of development happening in the capital. But Kulob is not the capital. Kulob is one of the smaller parts of Tajikistan. And when you go to Kulob, there are parts of Kulob which are very rural, which have not caught up with everything that has happened in the capital. And there are still places where you can see that the socioeconomic conditions aren't the great. People are still quite poor. They don't have all the resources that they need. And I believe that is one of the reasons why tuberculosis is still quite rampant in similar parts of the world today.
And tell me about the use of this extraordinary project, Missing Maps, and these wonderful initiatives called Mapathons. So you've been involved in this process. Tell me about it, because I think this is such an important mapping initiative.
So the Missing Maps is the project which was used to help us design this map. And the Missing Maps project is a humanitarian mapping initiative launched in 2014 by MSF, the Red Cross, and the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team. The idea is simple: to put the most vulnerable people on a map. And to do this, there is a process wherein we have volunteers who try to look at a satellite image of an area and try to put dots on where the settlements are. So this could be a building or this could be a hut. And also try to map where the streets or paths which could lead to these buildings. To be able to do this, we can rely on individual people if the area is small, but sometimes the area is vast and huge, and it's not, it's a single person can't do it. So we organize these events called mapathons, which are which can be done either in universities or even a group of people who are interested in maps. They can come together, they can look at satellite images and say that, hey, look, I'm looking at this part of the image, you look at this part of the image, and we try to pinpoint where the settlements could be. These could be huts, these could be buildings, these could be footpaths, these could be small land strips, and they are able to create these maps of settlements and roads. And then we have teams on the ground who can actually put names to these places that, hey, look, this street that you have marked on the map, this street is called this, and this area is called this, and so forth. So mapathons are a way to map these areas which are not commercially mapped.
It's such a great idea. I mean, the work is so important, but I think we should have a mapathon on What's Your Map. Anybody who wants to do this work should get involved, because we forget that people can contribute in that way online to mapping processes. It's easier than it's ever been, actually, because these maps are live. These are working live maps and actually can affect people's lives on the ground in places like Kulob.
It can, and it can affect people's lives in many other ways, such as a flash flood, an earthquake. And this is what actually happens on a day-to-day basis. Every time there is a medical need that, hey, there has been an earthquake in a remote area of Afghanistan, we immediately set up a mapathon that, hey, we need a map of this area. Where did people actually live? What were the area routes used to access them? And then these maps are available to all the aid teams who go to provide aid to those areas.
It's amazing. I mean, if ever we want to talk about the importance and validity of maps, and Animesh, you're giving us an example of it. Hearing Animesh talk, it feels like being on the front line of fighting this disease with him. But before we continue with this story, I'd love for you to join our global community of explorers by subscribing to this podcast. From mapping sounds to charting constellations, we have a wealth of episodes for you to enjoy. And subscribing means you won't miss a single new map, guest, or story from this series, or the next. Now, I want to hear more about Animesh's journey into medicine. Did you always know you wanted to be a doctor and work in health?
I did quite know early on that I wanted to be a doctor. I don't know if I can call it no, but I wanted to be a doctor, and that was because my dad was a doctor. So I was like, okay, hey, that's what I want to do as well. But when I got into university, my interest, surprisingly, was surgery. Tuberculosis was nowhere on my radar. That's one of the things that I want to do. Nah, tuberculosis, not too interesting as I used to think. And then when I joined MSF in 2011, the first place I went to was South Sudan. There was this place called Lankien, which is in Jonglei State in South Sudan, quite in the north of South Sudan. In that project, I used to do a lot of surgical procedures because there were a lot of people with gunshot wounds or other injuries and minor surgical procedures. I used to be very interested in doing that kind of stuff. But there were also tuberculosis, people who had tuberculosis disease, and that included a lot of babies and toddlers. So in babies and toddlers, as well as in adults, malnutrition or losing weight is one of the things that happens with tuberculosis, right? It was called consumption for a reason, because people used to lose weight. And what it manifests as in babies and toddlers is that they have malnutrition to different extents, and sometimes it's called severe acute malnutrition. So the treatment of malnutrition used to be therapeutic feeding, which is basically giving them a nutritious food. And we have these therapeutic feeding centers within many of our projects in South Sudan, as well as other areas where malnutrition is common. And whenever there were these babies who used to come with malnutrition, and if therapeutic feeding didn't work, there was an algorithm we used to follow and say, hey, look, this could be tuberculosis. Because as I said earlier in the podcast, that tuberculosis diagnosis can be really challenging in children. They don't produce sputum. They have posibacillary disease, meaning the bacterial load is quite low. Mm. And in places such as South Sudan, we didn't even have an X-ray back then. So the only way you could diagnose was clinically and based on how they were responding to the feeding. And I used to start these babies and toddlers on tuberculosis treatment, and they used to be transferred to the TB ward. And TB ward was managed by clinical officers. Only when there was an urgent need that they used to call for me that, hey, we have this emergency or we need your advice on this particular care. So that was not somewhere where I used to go on a day-to-day basis. So after a couple of months of being in the project, one day I stepped into the TB ward to see how things are going. And I noticed these fat, plump babies and toddlers moving around the ward. And I asked the clinical officer, who are these babies? Why are they around here? They seem to be healthy. And he was like, these are the same babies that you admitted, yeah, who were malnourished, who were not responding to feeding, and practically on the verge of death, these babies. Yeah. And to see them all full of life and playing, that just changed my perspective of tuberculosis being a disease, which is, as I used to call it, not interesting, to something that is life-changing. The fact that the disease takes a long time to make you sick, as well, it takes a long time for the drugs to work and to make you better. That is something which you have to understand when you are dealing with tuberculosis. And I think that my first project in South Sudan made me realize that tuberculosis drugs can work miracles. And if everybody can get access to these drugs, we can save a lot of lives. Following my first project in South Sudan, I then said, hey, the next project I want to work with MSF is a place where MSF works with tuberculosis. And that's why I went to Central Asian countries. I went to Uzbekistan first, followed by Chechnya, and then I went to Belarus, wherein I was working with the TB practical clinical trial to find a better treatment for drug-resistant tuberculosis.
And which were the most challenging moments there? Were the ones that were much harder? Were there more rewarding elements of those projects? Can you single any of them out?
I think the most challenging moment was when I first went to Chechnya. And I think the biggest challenge was that was the year 2013. And during that year, we still had the old treatment for drug-resistant tuberculosis. So MSF used to run a drug-resistant TB program in Chechnya. And if you look at graphs of TB cases following wars, you will see there is always an increase after a war. And post the Chechen conflict, there was an increase in number of people who have TB. Because when you have a war, TB is the last of your concerns. People who have been on TB treatment, their treatment gets interrupted. People who fall ill with TB, they don't get the diagnosis they need. They don't get the treatment they need. So the number of TB cases keeps increasing during war. And that is what you see after the war is over. All these people start coming and getting diagnosed. And you see this huge increase in number of TB cases. So MSF had a TB project in Chechnya. And when I first went to Chechnya in 2013, we did not have globally new treatments for tuberculosis. We still had 60-year-old antibiotics that we used to treat drug-resistant TB with. And in 2014, one of the first new drugs was introduced called bedaquiline. And within MSF, I think I was probably the first person to be able to use that drug in Chechnya for some of my patients who had been on these old treatments for years. Nothing was working for them. And to be able to use these new drugs on people and see the effect, that was a big moment for me. So I sometimes consider myself quite lucky that I started working with drug-resistant tuberculosis at a moment when I had access to these new drugs and new tools, which probably wasn't true for many people who had been working before me. For them, treating drug-resistant tuberculosis was akin to just subjecting patients to torture. Many patients used to say, it's easier to die than to take these medicines. Why should I take these medicines? They just make me feel worse and my chances of success don't improve much either. Mm. So why would I take these medicines? Mm.
But can I ask you, that's quite a journey because I understand that you started out working as an Indian Army medic who is interested in surgery and you've ended up working for MSF in these most challenging of areas, which are really at the sharp end of social diseases with huge stigma, but that can be treated. That's quite a journey for you personally.
Yeah, you're right. I started working as a medic in the Indian Army. I was working in different parts of the country, mostly in rural parts of the country, wherein we used to set camps for civilians. That's what I did most of my tenure within the army. And I think my interest then gradually was to be able to provide medical care to people who have been excluded from care. And that was the reason why after I completed my tenure within the army, I wanted to work with an organization that helped people who were excluded from care, who were facing epidemics, who were facing conflicts or disease outbreaks. So I wanted to be able to work in those contexts, and I found MSF to be an organization which was working in many of these contexts, and that's why I started working with MSF.
And where do you see yourself in, say, 10 years' time? Are you doing similar work, or what's the aspiration for you in terms of this kind of health work?
Globally, we are not making much progress when it comes to tuberculosis control. The international funding structures that we had in place to be able to address TB epidemic, HIV epidemic, those funding structures seem to be dismantling every day. Countries are reducing their international overseas assistance. International agencies which provided support to patients of tuberculosis and HIV are being defunded. And we see the effect of this on patients in the field. We see people being left out of TB care in Sudan. We see people not being able to get diagnostics done in Ethiopia. We see the effects practically everywhere we are working. The gaps in international funding don't do... Let me just put it this way, that the gaps in international funding might give you a short-term boost to your domestic funds, but in the long run, it's not going to be better for anybody.
And your resources of hope for the future?
I think there are a couple of things to look forward to when it comes to hope. So there are currently a few more studies ongoing on trying to find treatments for tuberculosis, which are better. Because the reality is that the tuberculosis bacilli have been with humanity for so long that they are very good at developing resistance. So the newest antibiotics that we have thrown at the bacteria, we already see the bacteria starting to develop resistance to these drugs. So I think the fact that there is still work ongoing is great, but I think we need to be optimistic, but very cautious with our optimism, that unless we put in adequate resources and we put it in timely, we will probably go back to TB being incurable. And that's something that keeps me worried. So I'm more worried than I'm optimistic. I know your question was what gives you optimism, but I think I'm more worried in the current funding scenarios on how we are going to make progress and how we are going to work towards elimination.
How do you see the future of using mapping around these health projects? Is that something that you see developing in more sophisticated ways? As we say, what's the map? Well, what's the map and what's the future of mapping health?
I think if all the places which have got high incidence of tuberculosis, if they were able to map and find out where the hotspots are and to be able to put in their resources, their limited resources that they have, they were able to direct those limited resources to the right places, they would be able to address the epidemic better as compared to just wildly putting in your resources anywhere and everywhere. I think maps can help them. But again, we have to realize that even putting things on a map can be time-consuming, can be expensive. But we've done it with different diseases at different points in history. Even with diseases such as COVID, we were able to do it in a very short period of time. So I'm sure if there is a will, we will be able to do it. The fact that the question remains, is there a will to put in resources to map tuberculosis globally?
I feel I've taken up enough of your time talking about maps when you should be back on the front line. Animesh Sinha, thank you so much for joining us on What's Your Map. It's been a really inspirational and very powerful conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yuri.
Not all heroes wear capes, and some, like Animesh, even use maps. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Jerry Broughton. This has been an Oculi Mundi exploration. The producer is Emily Uchida Finch at Whistledown Studios. Oculi Mundi is the online home of the Sunderland Collection of antique maps and atlases. You can read more about the Sunderland Collection and send suggestions for future maps to explore at oculi-mundi.com.